Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's Expert Exchange session. Thank you so much for joining us today. I want to let you know that we're going to get probably go a little bit long just to compensate for the fact that we've started late. So if you'd like to, please feel free to stay, and if you need to go, please feel free to go. But we're thrilled that you could join us today during this conversation about inclusive leadership and competitive advantage. I'm Heather Lawley. I am the thought leader within Cisco's inclusion and collaboration team, and we look forward to engaging our leaders on the panel here in a discussion about why inclusion is so important. And what's really great about inclusion is that it's about everybody, for everybody, and we can all take action in helping to shape it. And through today's dialogue, we'll dig into a little bit about some insights on what's worked, what hasn't worked, how it really can drive competitive advantage. And what we'll do is we'll have a discussion with the panelists, and then we'll open it up to Q&A. So with that said, would love to get to know our panelists a little bit better for each of you. I'll ask them to do some introductions and also mention why inclusion is so important to them.
Hi, thanks, Heather. We'll
start with Hope here.
Great. I'm Hope Galley. I am an emerging partner account manager within Cisco's public sector organization. I've been with Cisco for close to 18 years. So for you people who can't see me over here, I started when I was 12. Just so you know. Inclusion is extremely important to me because I started out my career in high tech, which was a big VAX and Unix-based system for those people who have no idea what I'm talking about. But it was in the automobile industry, so I was the only woman working for a Fortune 500 company, and I had all men working for me who reminded me every day that I was younger than their daughter, and I was their boss. So I became very passionate about this issue as I got to Cisco and during the time I was a part of this organization, because I never wanted anyone to feel like they weren't included or a part of the company and the culture. And I also saw during that time what a difficult time it was for those who did not look or act or weren't the same age as those who were already employed at a company. So I worked very hard when I was there to figure out how can women compete and be respected in a workforce where you're half the age and a different gender. And many people, as the millennials are experiencing today, have children or nieces and nephews who are of that age. So I've seen firsthand how things cannot go well in an organization. And I've seen through my 17 plus years here at Cisco how diversity and inclusion can go well and be executed.
Thanks, Hope. Brenda?
Hello, everyone. So Brenda Dennis with Cisco. I have been Cisco for 18 years and have always been on the sales side of the house. When I started at Cisco, we had 5,000 employees, and we now have 75,000 employees. So in those 5,000 employees, there were just handfuls of women. There was not many, as Hope said, in a tech world. There are just not a lot of women. And so especially being in field sales for Cisco at that time, there were probably 10 of us across the country. And what really got me passionate about it was that we needed to get more women in. And I was in a meeting with, I was the sales manager for the time in the East, and I was in a meeting with Johnson & Johnson. We were going in to meet the CIO, Joanne Heisen, who is a very big advocate of advancement of women. And my team was with me. All men. And we walked in, and she put us in the conference room next to her office, and she walked in, she looked at us all around the table, and she said, "Well, I'm glad that Cisco finally let a woman come to the table." And it was then that was sort of that epiphany for me that, you know, there's more women that are in the positions of purchasing and buying, and they want to have more women there to interact with. So we started up what we called in the early days of Cisco a Women's Action Network. It was the very first stage of our ERGs. Sue Bostrom, myself, a handful of us, and we started in the East Coast. And it's just amazing to see now the growth that we've had of women in technology and continuing to try to get not just women, but all forms of diversity in our organization. So that's why I'm passionate about it. I think that when we talk about competitive advantage, there's a huge competitive advantage in innovation, in sales, in development, by having inclusive and integrated workplaces.
Thanks, Brenda. Steve?
Thanks, Brenda. That was awesome. So Steve Yeager, I am the Vice President of Technical Support, which means that all the angry customers in the Americas call me. That's my job. But I'm passionate about inclusion and diversity for lots of reasons. But the number one reason that I am is because it's right. And besides the fact that it's right, it's the reality that in order to compete as any company, the great companies are diverse. And by the way, the statistics show you that those with diverse workforces, right, are the best companies in the world. And so I'm passionate about people getting an opportunity coming to the table. And I love the comment earlier today, right? There's no lack of talent, only a lack of opportunity. And I thought that was a great, I even wrote it down myself from this morning. I thought it was fabulous. So that's why I'm passionate.
Thank you, Steve. And Gail.
Thank you. I still have Bobby McGee in my head. Do you guys have that in your head? Wasn't that amazing? We had to leave a few minutes earlier to get up here. That was just awesome. So I'm Gail Morris. I run a services business here at Cisco, and I've been here a little over 7 years. I'm passionate about inclusion and diversity, and it's from my own personal experience, much like what Hope and Brenda described. I mean, early days in the industry, I was in the minority, but I had the good fortune to work for an immigrant CEO who had a particular style to be very inclusive. He immigrated to the U.S. from Shanghai when he was 12 and was a brilliant man. And there was a pretty significant initiative for our company. And I was the provocative 20-something-year-old that had raised my hand to promote a particular idea, and everyone voted me down. And I actually went to the CEO at the time and proposed a solution, which he subsequently adopted and got my boss and everybody else to embrace. And he really, you know, took an approach of paying the way forward, which for me, it's very personal to me. And I have the opportunity to do that every day in my role at Cisco and certainly my time in the industry. So it's important for all of the reasons the rest of the panelists have called out here. And it's also important for me as a leader to give back.
Great, thanks everybody. So you all talked about not only diversity, which is obviously critical, and when we think of diversity, it's not only gender and race, but it's diversity of thought and perspective, and really the key to unlocking that is inclusion. Steve, can you tell us a little bit about how you've gone about unlocking the potential of inclusion in your team as a leader?
Sure. I mean, that's a great one, Heather. It's when you think about how you do that, and as a leader, if you think about building teams, I use this word all the time. It's about being intentional. And so I work very hard to be intentional in how I build my teams. I think consistently about, you know, every 30 days I might be thinking about a year from now or 6 months from now, how's the team going to change and who needs to be here? And so being intentional is the key. That's the number one thing. The second thing I think about when I'm building teams is about the dynamics of any team that we have. And if you're intentional about building the dynamics of that team, then you're thinking about the construction of that team. You're also thinking about the way people process. And I'll tell you, being a part of the Cisco, we get an opportunity to see cultures around the world. We get to engage with our people around the world. And people are different. Some are introverted and extroverted. Some are from different cultures. And so when you build teams, you must think about how you engage those teams in order for everyone to be successful. Because it's one thing to build a team. It's another one to engage the team. So that's how I go about it.
Okay, great. Thank you. And when we think about the impact of that, building diverse and inclusive teams, and we think about the very topic today of competitive advantage. Brenda, can you tell us a little bit about what you've observed, your experience as far as business impact of inclusion?
Sure. So I was also asked to throw out a couple of statistics around women. So I'm going to start with that first. So throw these out and then talk about competitive advantage. So women make up over 80% of all consumer purchases. Women make up over 50% of the workforce, and that's growing. You mentioned this earlier when you opened. Companies with a higher proportion of women in top management have higher performance and are more profitable. Okay, so we're starting to see a theme and a trend here. 1.7 times greater stock growth compared to their industry average when you have more women at the higher levels of leadership. And a Harvard study showing that gender-driven companies are 69% more profitable. So, with that, we know that there's some significant business results in having inclusive work organizations and getting women into different roles of leadership. So at Cisco, there's a couple of things that we're doing. One is we're trying to engage not just women, but you mentioned it, all forms of diversity and diverse thought, right? So it's about the diverse thought and the diverse experiences that we bring to the table to help us innovate, to help us come up with the new solutions for our client base, new solutions for our customers, new products. So some of the things that we've done is we've created these innovation engines, innovation centers, where people can, we do some via contests, we do some via websites where you can go and put in your ideas that get socialized. And the great thing is it's creating through technology an open forum and dialogue so that we're not just creating all of our technology by people sitting in San Jose, but we're drawing on people from across the world in diverse socioeconomic situations, gender, religion, all of the diversity that we can bring to the table. So I'm going to tell a story that's non-Cisco based, if I can. I mentioned Absolutely. The Johnson & Johnson one, and there's a lot of men in the audience. I hope they don't mind me telling the story. But so a good friend of mine, I know you are, you're right here. It just gives you an idea about product development. So a good friend of mine is an executive. She's an executive at P&G. And when she first started, she had a group of designers and developers, and they were in a room brainstorming, and she walked in to observe. Okay, well, the product line that they were developing was panty liners. Okay, so who knows what panty liners are? The reason I tell this story is it was all men designing.
I'm feeling a little uncomfortable.
Okay, good. That's okay. Uncomfortable is good. So, but they're designing this, and the conversation, she said, was pretty amazing. It was on the pull-off strip. What font should we use for, you know, the wording that we're going to put on there? And she was listening to this conversation, and she thought, I don't care what the font is. I don't care. And if you want to put a coupon on there for some shoes or something, I might pay attention to it. But other than that, I don't care. But the point of the story is that it really is just important to make sure that you've got an inclusive group of people as you're developing products and solutions, whatever your market and your industry is, can have great impact. I think that that's one of the benefits that we've had at Cisco recently with a lot of the offerings that we're doing in the field, right? And both of you have a lot of millennials in your group.
Absolutely.
And men and women, and I think that's one of the advantages we have.
Thanks, Brenda. Yeah. When we think about the values of inclusion and, again, bringing them to life, how, Gail, do you act as a role model in driving inclusion through your employees, through the business, and can you give some examples of that?
Well, when we were chatting about this question, I have to tell you, Steve is a partner of mine, so we sell the service. He deals with the cranky customers, if in fact we have any, but we mostly have happy customers, thankfully, through great products and great service we deliver. But I think you really do have to, as I said earlier, live and walk the walk and live inclusion and diversity every day as a leader. You know, for my team, we're a high growth team, fast paced team, large scale business, and it's all about how we innovate and how agile we are as a business and what we bring to market and how we do that through our partners to our customers. And it's really based on a platform of a high degree of innovation. And sometimes we're in the heat of it and we really don't appreciate how much diversity goes into the innovation of our day-to-day work product. And it's really, you know, what's worked for me, and I chatted about this in the other panel, is just, you know, three simple things around recognition, rewards, and engagement. And I do think that the engagement aspect of IND is probably the most critical for us. And when I say engagement, it is across a broad spectrum of generations, of perspectives, of backgrounds, of ethnicity. And collectively, it has fueled the innovation that connects to our business results. So if you run a business and you pick what's going to work for you in your particular industry, we're in technology, so innovation is obviously a hot button for us. But if you pick what works for you in your industry and figure out how to engage and how to unlock that potential, it's staggering what you can deliver as a result. I will tell you, having been at Cisco for 7 years, having the operating budget I got when I came in, and it hasn't increased exponentially, running the largest business with the lowest expense to revenue ratio in the company, what we get out of the diverse team we have every day amazes me. Every single day. So I think you have to live it.
Okay, thanks. And I think that brings us well into the next question, which is really about living it and connecting not only the head to inclusion, you know, as far as the processes and how we engage with one another, but also the heart in engaging inclusion and how the behaviors that we exhibit within our company and to one another. And so, Hope, related to that, what is the most significant personal growth experience that you've had related to this topic?
Well, the thing I kind of left out of my story when I introduced myself, I'm a handicapped American. Those of you who haven't seen me with cane, so I'm considered disabled. I'm also a cancer advocate, a two-time cancer survivor. And if I can indulge you in a bit of a story of a girl named Hope for a few moments. When I came to Cisco, I was one of the first female RMs within Cisco. I knew everything. I was, you know, graduated with honors, and I was running this business, and she still likes me, and we knew each other then, which is good, because I was kind of a brat. So I got a lot of exposure, and I spent a lot of time with our executive team, and I had some opportunities to go to Europe and work over there and so forth, and it was great. I was also a marathon runner. By no stretch of the imagination was an elite marathon runner. I was a four-hour marathon runner. Anyone out there a four-hour marathon runner? Okay, maybe five. Okay, four and a half. Okay. So I was type A to the max, you know, and my name is Hope. And, you know, I'm the daughter of a kitchen worker and a post office mailman. So I was going to make it happen. You know, get out of Pickwell, Ohio. I was going to be the CEO. That was going to be my title here, right? So in 2008, I was going for a run, a 16-mile run, and I couldn't walk. And my legs, you know, cramped up, and I couldn't walk. And so I went to the emergency room, and they said that I had a blood clot, and I was like, okay, give me the shots, let's move on, you know, blah, 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 it's a blood clot, I'm 35, I just took a red eye in the middle seat, had three glasses of wine, decided to go for a run the next morning, okay, shame on me. So time progressed and went on for 2 months. I worked for a man who worked for a man who worked for a man, and they all kept reaching out to me, how are you doing? I'm like, I'm great, and I had my IV pulled doing my commit calls, because now they said it was an infection, and I'm, you know, literally, can you imagine being in a meeting now with your boss and she is on an IV asking you if you're going to make your number for the week? I mean, come on. I mean, but that was me. I mean, I was going to get it done. And this is before Cisco really was in the collaboration space. I mean, this is like 2007, 2008, right? So time goes on and it gets worse. So Cisco has their global sales conference and everyone's together, and I get a voicemail from my CEO, my senior vice president of sales at the time. He leaves me a voicemail like, Hope, everyone's out here. They're saying this is bad. You know, how bad is it? So forth and so on. And I'm like, and again, I'm still a woman, right? So I don't want to be like, it's bad, you know? But so I couldn't even say the words, so I wrote an email. Because I couldn't say the words that I have cancer, this is not good, it's not going away. You know, I couldn't show weakness, so, because I was a woman, I didn't want them to think I couldn't handle the job, right? So I emailed this individual back, and I was trying to get in. I had seen three doctors, and they told me, okay, you have 5 months to live. You know, and they said to my mother, who happens to be in the audience, get her affairs in order, or make her as comfortable as possible. Good thing she has a younger brother, you know, your family will move on. Sensitive doctors. But so within the time I sent that email, within 4 hours, our CEO, John Chambers, I don't know how many of you know who he is, but to me, he's a hero. His office is on the line with Johns Hopkins University to the doctor that I'm trying to get into. It's Labor Day weekend, and I am in that doctor's office first thing Monday morning. I, you know, and this is, because I was a woman, I didn't think I could show I was vulnerable, and I showed, and these gentlemen that I was vulnerable are leaders, and they didn't see me as a woman or a man or anything. They saw me as an employee in need, and they made the right, you know, decisions and did everything they could. Went to Hopkins, you know, had my little surgeon hops up, does his surgery. I act like it's no big deal. It was like 18 and a half hours. It was kind of a big deal. And
And then I lost use of my left leg, and then I had to learn to walk again. As I'm learning to walk again, I have a PET scan, and oh, guess what? It's back. It liked me so much. I was so good the first time, I thought it would come back again. Again, I didn't want to tell anyone, but, you know, I learned this process. My team at Christmas, you know, I came home from cancer treatment at Christmas, and my team brought me a Christmas tree with ornaments from all of the employees and people I didn't even meet all over the world to decorate my Christmas tree with. You know, like, who does that, right? It's a culture. It's like people are embracing, you know, the fact that not that I was a woman, but I was a person. And it changed my life. So for me, my personal mission is, you know, as an advocate, as a cancer advocate, and as a leader in this company, is to pay it forward with folks. So whether it's raising money for cancer research, whether it's reaching out and calling people who have been affected with cancer, whether it's just talking to people coming into their careers early to understand the culture that people are people, you know? And it doesn't matter if you're Black, white, Hispanic, male, woman, millennium, you know. I'm married to a baby boomer, by the way. That sounds so funny. But you know, people are people, and you know, you can create that culture through building the teams that Brenda and the team have built. You know, that it's these leaders here have shown that whether you're a woman, a man, old, young, wherever you're at in your career, Brenda, Steve, and Gail, and individuals like them, because of Cisco's culture brought down from Chambers, can create an amazing experience. And because of them, a girl named Hope is alive and is paying it forward as much as I can, bringing not just cancer survivors, but people with disabilities and vets and folks into our business. So, a little long, but I appreciate you taking the time.
Well, thank you, Hope, for sharing your story. It's really courageous, and it's so amazing, as we were talking about, that inclusion, it can happen at so many levels. And just know that each of you can help to drive inclusion. It's not just something that a corporation does or that leaders do. It's something that we all do and that we're all responsible for. And it's something, as you were saying, Hope, that not only applies to life at work, but life outside of work. What we're gonna do is open it up for questions, and then we'll go ahead and ask the panel some tangible actions that they believe that each of you could take. And then we'll go ahead and do a close. So I just wanted to open it up for questions. Feel free to, if you would, step up to the mic. And we'll take two at a time and then allow the panelists to answer, and then we'll keep taking them as long as time allows. And then if we don't have enough time to get to all of them, just know that we'll be here after the session to answer questions as well. So thank you. Please feel free to go ahead.
Hi, thank you guys so much for your time. First of all, I'm Deanna Davidson. I work for the City of Austin, and my question to the panel is, I work in instructional design, and part of what I do is to try to inform my teams of what exactly you guys are talking about. So coming from the private sector to the public sector, what is the one thing that you would say I absolutely need to make sure that my curriculum passes forward to my team?
Okay, great, thank you. And then we'll go ahead and take the next question as well.
So hi, Larissa Santos, I work at Cisco. My question really is, you were speaking to, we may have a different perspective, a different message, a young girl starting out and no one wanted to listen because you're young and bright-eyed. Have you found an effective way to really communicate that although your perspective and thought and idea might be different, how to really interject that in an effective manner that maybe you're not, you know, coming off abrasive or different manners?
Okay, great, thank you. So let's go ahead and get started with the first question around instructional design. And with Deanna representing this work back into her company, is there anything in particular that you would recommend that has to be included as part of the curriculum to get this conversation going and to move the agenda forward? Anyone want to go ahead and start?
There's a lot of things, Deanna, that you can do. And first and foremost, congratulations to you for taking this on. It's not an easy thing to enact change, especially in sort of sometimes if you're working in a culture that's more traditional or more male dominated, it just takes some perseverance to get it out there. So think about in the messaging, I think it's best not to go from a defensive perspective, right, when you're building this. It's about you know, you're strategic thought leader around inclusion and collaboration and diversity. I think that's the message that you want to make sure that you're building in, is what is the impact that we'll have on your business, public or private sector, by creating an inclusive environment. It's not just about women. It's not just about race. Make sure that it's tying back into what's the business benefit or the employee engagement benefit or something. That's when you're going to get the organization to listen to it more, and it's going to resonate with more people. There's some little things you can also build into the curriculum, I think, that's helpful, is micro inequities. If you've done any work, you can look that up. Micro inequities is a great one, because that, again, is not just about men or women. All of us come forward with our stereotypes, and these things are, we react to things in a microsecond. Reactions that we don't know, the way we raise our eyebrows, the way that we, you know, sigh or sit back or lean forward, or all these things show what our prejudices are when we don't even maybe think we have them. And so the more you can make people more self-aware, for all of us, more self-aware, it's good. And if you can encourage people to reach out to those that either make them feel uncomfortable or that are so different from them, just sit down, go in this room, find someone that seems to be so different than you, reach out, go talk to them, learn about their culture, learn about their background, learn about what's easy and hard for them on a given day. And the more that we encourage that, the more we start realizing we're very similar. We have similar issues, similar concerns, similar desires, similar dreams. And it starts breaking down these sort of barriers that we have that many times really shouldn't be there or aren't real. So I don't know if that helps, but a couple of ideas you might want to consider.
Okay, thanks, Brenda. And as we think about the second question about having a diverse perspective and having your voice heard, are there any recommendations, and I would ask it from both sides, of the person trying to have their voice heard, and as a leader, looking to enable an environment where people can have their voices heard? Would anyone like to start with that question?
If you'll let me, I'll go.
I will.
All right. So let me, Larissa, thanks for asking the question. It is, let me just put the obvious on the table, right, first from my perspective. I think we live in a wonderful world today. It's much better than it was. Listen to what Soledad described earlier, right? The world that her parents grew up in, it's a different world today, but it's still, we're not done. We're not done. And I work with amazing people. They're all, you know, genders and ethnicities, but there are still ceilings, and there are still things that are happening. There are micro inequities. There are macro inequities that still exist. And so my first argument, you know, I just want to put that on the table because I think it's a reality. So whenever you're dealing with the difficulties, you need to know where you are and what you're dealing with. And I think despite knowing where you are and what you're working with, I think of the description of going to work when Hope went to work in the beginning. And you know, all of us, it's different, right? So, first, start with where are you and who are you working with. That would be one thing. I think the other thing I'll tell you that I want to, and hopefully maybe this will inspire. And I was going to save it for later, but I want to do it now. Is that don't ever let anybody ever limit who you are. Don't let anybody ever describe what you're capable of, limit you, tell you what you can't do, tell you who you have to be. You know, you are the only one who defines who you are. So when you have great ideas and you bring them forward and people don't listen, think about the examples we heard today. I love that. What are the blocks? I always forget it. What kind of blocks were they this morning? Goldie blocks. Think of her walking in. I love that story. Walking into a bunch of, as soon as, by the way, she said guys in suits, what did these people do? They looked at me.
Old guys.
They looked at me. All right. So the truth is, she walked in and there were all those guys in suits. Did she wait? Did she just keep banging her head against that wall? She found another way to solve the problem. And so my argument is, when you have great ideas, don't ever let them get swallowed up in one form. Find another way to bring them forward. Find another way to inject your ideas. And don't let everybody ever tell you can't. You don't have good ideas, or you don't have the right idea. That would be how I would start, right?
And I'll just add to that, because you talked about what's the most effective way to communicate. And I think being authentic and being passionate and being professionally persistent is okay. It's really okay, just like we talked about with Debbie Starling earlier today. But you know, it's okay to be professionally persistent. I love when I get an email, which I did 2 days ago from a gal, an early in career gal, I met in Raleigh 2 weeks ago, and she said, you know, we talked about doing this. I'm ready to start. Like, I am on it. Where do I go? How do I get going? And this is like at 1 a.m. I'm emailing her back. I'm like, oh, okay. But you know what? It's okay. It's okay. Know your audience. You know, get your style, get your communication style, because there's a different way you communicate up versus out, right? But it's okay to be persistent.
Okay, thanks to you both. Do we have any other questions?
Hello, thank you guys so much for being here. I think one of the things that you've touched on is that we've made a lot of progress with inclusion, but we still have a long way to go. For those of us in the audience that are moms, what advice do you have for us about how we talk to our kids at young ages so that they grow up to be inclusive leaders?
Okay, thank you.
I can take that one if you want.
We'll just go ahead and take the second question and then feel free to jump in.
Yes. Hi, my name is Nabila, and I'm here with a lot of my D&I ambassadors. And as we're embarking on this conversation about inclusiveness, one of the things that we hear often is how to get past the fear of political correctness and the fear as leaders of saying the wrong thing as we engage our organizations in this conversation. And, you know, we're kind of at the start of this process, so I'd really like to hear from y'all's perspective what you've done at Cisco to kind of empower your leadership team to embark on this conversation of inclusiveness, to create that in conversation so there isn't that place of fear where we're like, we're going to get sued, we're going to say the wrong thing, you know, people are going to take this the wrong way, that perspective. So it'd be interesting to hear.
Okay, thank you. So Hope, I know you felt passionate about the first question about teaching your children about inclusion and how do you instill those values?
Mm-hmm. I have a 1.5 and a 4-year-old. The 1.5-year-old fell today, and she has a black eye at home and so in Washington, D.C. So needless to say, I'm a little passionate about being a mother today and not being there. But for me personally, it's I've never seen, like, I know people say they've never seen color, you know, but I didn't grow up, like, with my parents saying, you know, this is my friend Raj and they're Catholic, and this is my friend Kelly and she's Chinese, and this is my friend. Yeah, I just never grew up with that. So I think my parents had friends, and they had friends who were black, they had friends who were white, they had friends who were Asian, they had friends who were ministers, they had friends who owned bars, they had friends, you know, I think the way that you teach them is by example, is them being around people and being experiencing different things. I mean, I live in a metropolitan area. I live, you know, right outside Washington, D.C. So, you know, we do events in different areas. If there's the, you know, Spanish Heritage Festival, we go. You know, they had the Greek festival in town. We went. They have they're building the they have the Indian Museum downtown. You know, I think experiencing seeing it, because I think if you make it an issue and you say, okay, you know, yeah, we have to have, you know, a quota system or something in your head, because there are parents who do this. You know, I hear it from the moms in my little school, like, I want them to go to this school because they are 30% African American and 20% Asian and you know, 40% don't. It's not measured. Like, don't be like that. Just, I think leading by example, as silly as that sounds, and exposing them to different things, I think is the biggest thing. And I was from a town of 15,000 people, so my parents had to go far to expose me to different, you know, just cultures and folks. I don't know if that
Thank
helps.
Thank you, Hope. Anyone else want to add on that one?
Just two quick things that I'll add. I think great advice. We all can own this a little more. This change comes with, it's generational, right? And every generation, every 5 and 10 years, we're starting to see change in movement. You and I were talking about the comment about, it was in the 50s, Soledad mentioned interracial marriage, right? And it was being illegal, and we're like, wow, 50 years isn't that long ago, right? A lot happens, right? So part of it just is gonna take time, but the more that we ourselves individually watch the stereotypes that we are imparting on our kids, not even knowing. And great example, I'm very passionate about women in technology and STEM. And, you know, you hear even today comments of parents saying to their young girls, to not worry about knowing finance, or my daughter's not good in math, or, you know, hearing little girls say, oh, I'm not really good in math. It's that type of reinforcement that's so detrimental and reinforces the wrong stereotypes, which is why I love the Goldilocks story, right? So we can all own that and just be really careful about the types of things that we're saying, because those are kids, right? They're listening to every single word that we're doing. Media is helping to change stereotypes too, right? We're starting to see laws starting to improve and change, so it's going to take some time. The second thing I would say is, as women, or as anyone who feels like they are not getting the advantage that they would like to have in the environment they're in, don't be a victim. You cannot put it all on the company or the system or the process. We all have to own it, and that we all have to do whatever we can to figure out a way to maneuver the system to get it done, and to be persistent, and don't stop. It comes down to knowing what you want and asking for it, because a lot of times we just feel we can't get it because that's the way the system is. But knowing what you want and being able to ask for it. Back when I started at Cisco, I mentioned there were 5,000 people. There were a couple handfuls of women in the field. I was one of the first that got pregnant at Cisco, and they did not know what to do, because the way our sales compensation system worked is that I wasn't going to get paid while I was out on maternity leave for anything that I even had sold but booked while I was out. And there was this big deal at Johnson & Johnson coming in. I said, you can't, this is crazy. It's going to come in a week after I have my baby. This is crazy. And it took a lot of uncomfortable, you know, positioning and conversations and that to get that overturned, which is now a policy we have in place for both men and women. And it just, so push it. If something doesn't feel right, go and push it. Ask for what you want. That is probably one of the key things. And if it doesn't work out, stand up, brush off your knees, you know, go again, right? And try another way to get it done.
I think, Brenda, that's a great segue into the next question that we have about sometimes how difficult it can be to change culture, and how do we play a role in helping to push those conversations forward. I know you were talking a bit about the political correctness and how to engage in those courageous conversations, yet in an appropriate way. So would anyone like to talk a little bit about how you'd recommend approaching that situation?
So great question, by the way, and it's one we need to take on as, you know, the corporations around the world, because the reality is it's something we face. Inside Cisco, something we're doing is we're starting with teaching managers. I'll give you an example. Most managers, male managers, don't know what they can and can't talk to about women who work for them when they're pregnant. They're like, I don't even know what I'm allowed to say, and I'm scared to bring it up, or we're not going to talk about maternity leave, you know. So it's this, and by the way, there's legally, there's so much you're supposed to talk about, right? And so a lot of it goes, from my perspective, is just take away the political, teach people what they can do. There's so many things they can do, right, about what happens and how you deal with circumstances inside the company. So let's teach. I think the teaching is a great opportunity. I think it's also modeling, because there's a lot of male leaders who don't want to engage in that side of the conversation either. And you know what? If you want to lead and you want to manage, you need to, or you shouldn't manage, right? That would be the other statement I would say. And so we should be engaging, and it's about, and culture is the hardest thing to change. I think we talk about that a lot. Once it's ingrained inside of I worked at a company that had a culture from they were divested, and all the leaders left, new leaders are there, but the culture still existed from it's so hard to change culture. But it does start from within, I think. And I think there's an opportunity to do that. So that's how I would start and go about it, right? Teach is the right answer. And thank you for asking that. That is an awesome question.
And I just want to add one thing to what Steve covered. We're fortunate to work for a company where inclusion and diversity is an imperative for us. And while, you know, the management training, coaching and guidance, you know, mid-level managers, senior managers can provide our leaders inside the company, having that support from the top down and that platform and that culture is just so different. I've worked at several high-tech companies, and I will tell you, when you have that support, which we definitely have at Cisco, it makes it so different. And it puts an accountability on all of the leaders in the company and candidly team members to really push the envelope on being inclusive.
Great, thanks to you both. We'd like to open up to a couple more questions.
Two questions.
Okay.
So I'm Catherine Yan. I work for Cisco. I'm actually the inclusion and collaboration lead for Pavesh.
Yeah, thanks for it's not inclusion and diversity, Gail. It's inclusion and collaboration.
And that's kind of part of my first question, actually. So I've been doing this for a while, right? We've all been saying inclusion, diversity, and we know diversity is important, and we do know inclusion is the next step. So a few months back, we changed to inclusion and collaboration. And, you know, we've got so many questions coming up. I know there's explanation on CEC explaining why we did that, because diversity is kind of part of inclusion. But it's still kind of troublesome, you know, to people, including myself. You know, why did we have to make that change? So I think that question might go more to Heather. Why do you think there was a need to make that change? Okay. The second question is, I think many of you touched on it, right? Definitely agree we need to own our own career, right? You know, I'm a woman. I know I have things that I do in a certain way and most men don't do, which helps them to be more successful. I know I need to watch out for that. I know I need to adjust. I need to drive my own career. But I also know for the bigger environment, we need to do something, you know, to help women, like the Goldie Box, right? Something has to be done to give those girls with talents the opportunity, right? And at Cisco, I know when Lee Ying came out, John Chambers read it. He asked his leaders to read it. So that's kind of helping to change the big culture, right? The bigger culture at Cisco. And then we also have the managing bias training for all the managers, right? And there's subtle difference there. You want to understand it and it help you to take care of your team. So the biggest issue we have in the diversity within Cisco is gender, right? So it's not the ethnicity and all that. We're pretty balanced. We're doing well. But gender, we have a lot to do. And we know the women need to own their own careers. But what do you think we can do from the company, you know, top down, to change our culture, to create opportunities to help those women to grab those opportunities and succeed?
Okay, thank you. So I can go ahead and start with the inclusion and collaboration. So this actually is a recent change for Cisco. If you think about the evolution of inclusion and diversity, many years ago, it really started with the idea of this, you know, checks and balances, counting people, and it's as it's evolved, as we've talked about today, it's really about a business imperative. And inclusion and collaboration takes it to that next level. Diversity is still so critical to the overall picture because it's always about the people. But the notion with inclusion and collaboration is that it's really going to empower us to go to the next level. And what I mean by that is if we think about people and their participation. So how do we create a culture and an environment where everybody is free and willing and inspired to participate as employees, you know, bringing their authentic selves to work, as leaders, as we've talked about, and having that level of accountability. And collaboration is really a key. And when we think about collaboration, it's about how we work. It can be our behaviors, it can be our physical environments and how we're working, it can be collaboration technologies and how we're engaging. And we'd actually done some studies with external customers that showed that when they were looking at collaboration and collaboration technologies and were asked to identify what they really believe could unlock the potential of their collaboration technologies, inclusion was the second on the list. And so we started to have a different sort of dialogue around inclusion and diversity and inclusion and collaboration truly from this business perspective and how it helps to drive innovation and employee engagement and profitability and productivity. So it's really an evolution that's not ignoring diversity at all, but it's taking it and expanding it. So that's a little bit of insight onto the approach that we're taking and why we've changed the approach a little bit. We just see it as part of natural evolution and pushing forward and onward and coming up with what is next and what is important. So as far as the next question, as we look at the environment, and the question's really specifically about gender, but definitely I'm sure it applies across diversity dimensions. How do we create an environment and an opportunity that allows people to succeed and excel?
Well, and if I understood the question too, it's what can we fundamentally do different? It's great for all of us to come here in great get empowerment ideas. What can I do to try to change it? But there's still a system that has to change and a culture that has to change, and some of that has to be, much of it has to be top down, right? It has to be driven top down. So when you look at the statistics, companies that start having more women in senior leadership roles and at the board levels start seeing the increase of women throughout the entire management organization increase, okay? So it's starting there. Many companies will have a diversity program in place to try to get more women in, and you start seeing large numbers of women kind of coming in at the lower levels of the company, but you still have big gaps at the top. It has to happen on both fronts. It's got to be a strong business partnership between the HR organization and the business leaders. There has to be a strong understanding of what the business benefit to that company is. So what are some of the things that we can be doing as a company and industry? We've got a challenge. Gail, you mentioned it. You've worked for many tech companies. This is not just a Cisco issue. This is across tech overall. It is going to take some time to change that, to get more women involved in technology careers and positions. So building that pipeline is going to be important to continue to do it through STEM programs, et cetera. And then we also have put in place, instead of quotas, right, but we've put in place as leaders, you know, we all know that when we have positions open, we need to look at the high potential pools that we have, not just in our own siloed business, but across the company, that we need to make sure that we got a diverse candidate of people that we're looking at, and that our interview panel is also diverse, right? So if we're looking for someone, we don't just have 5 white males interviewing every candidate that comes in, but that we have a diverse panel as well. So those are some of the process type things that companies can do to start making sure that we're giving a fair opportunity to any diverse candidate that comes up.
Okay, thank you, Brenda. I think that really helps to make it tangible, you know, both from the people and the process perspective, because it really is a change management effort. Okay. Go ahead and answer some more questions.
Hi, my name is Ann Talley. I work with Cisco. And I was wondering, Steve mentioned the sometimes the awkwardness of when can I ask, you know, what can I ask, what am I allowed to do? From an individual contributor level, how can we make awkward inclusion and diversity and collaboration easier moving upward for our either in our individual groups or upwards in our management chain?
Okay, great, thank you. And I'll go ahead and take the next one.
Hello, my name's Heather Caraway. I think it's great that Cisco has such a strong connection to inclusion and collaboration, and it's an imperative for you guys. So my question is, if you're interested in a career and really focusing on that within a department like Cisco's of inclusion collaboration, how does one position themselves, and this may be more of a question for Heather, to go and work, you know, if I wanted to go work in the inclusion and collaboration department at Cisco, what do you look for in those employees?
Okay, great, thank you. All right, we'll go ahead and take those two, and then we'll come to your question, and then I think we'll go ahead and do the rapid fire quickly after that. You know what, why don't we go ahead and get yours and we'll...
Yeah, my question is simple. How about closing that compensation gap with the male employee?
Great question. Thank you. So as we start with the first question about how can individual contributors start to bring forward those conversations and help to drive the cultural change about having the conversations around inclusion and diversity and collaboration.
I just want to call out, that question was framed at Steve about making awkward easy. I wrote it down.
I'm here with 7,000 women, I think. Yeah.
I don't know that awkward's ever easy, because it's awkward, right? You know, I think transparent communication's a good guiding light, always, always. And sometimes, you know, team members and the ones I respect the most are the ones that will come forward with a conversation that maybe others wouldn't bring up, that may be a little bit more uncomfortable. But I think you figure out within your team dynamic or your group or your relationship with your manager or a colleague that you trust, or a mentor, or a sponsor, how to, you know, embark on that situational discussion, particular circumstance, how you want to change the culture and the dynamic of your team. It certainly starts with having a great manager and a great leader. It certainly helps to work for a company that puts a value on a diverse, highly collaborative, highly inclusive workplace. Because there's a standard, you know, that as a leader at this company, you have to hold up. You know, the bar's set pretty high. So I don't know if I gave you, you know, any pearl of wisdom other than Steve is awkward. And, but
and he's comfortable.
Yeah, and he's comfortable in that. But, you know, they're not comfortable conversations. And that's the harsh reality. And I think if you want to own it, you know, and you want to change it, and you want to be part of making that change, it's figuring out how you leverage, you know, some insights from colleagues to make that happen.
Hope, did you want to add something?
Sorry, Brenda and I are having a side conversation because we had a very similar conversation about this last night. So I think sometimes people say things and they don't even realize what they're saying. For example, there's some leadership who I thought called me kiddo for the longest time. I just thought it was me. And I'm talking to Brenda. They've called Brenda kiddo in the past, too. We're not kiddos. I mean, I wish I were now. Now I'm kind of wishing I were a kiddo. But I think people don't know. So I was telling her a story about how when I became a manager, when we were in the meeting, and one of my peer managers turned to me and said, "Hey, kiddo, what do you think about that?" And to the point of one of the sessions I was at, I took some time, I wrote that down, I didn't react, you know, I just answered my question, and then I got him aside one-on-one, and I just said, "Paul," I'll just use the name Paul, "Paul, you know, I'm managing a team. If your team was in the room, would you like to be called kiddo, or old white guy, or whatever, you know, we want to call it?" You know, but they don't know, and they're saying it, they feel, as a term of endearment sometimes. And I think we sometimes jump to conclusions that they're trying or being disrespectful and they don't know. So my advice to you as an individual contributor is, depending on who the person is, because there is some sensitivity, but to make people aware that it's not correct, you know, and so forth. That would be my advice, having been an IC and a manager.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And I think same thing that both you and Gail said is that it's how you approach it. You know, doing it in a defensive way in front of people, embarrassing them, is not the way to go about it. And so it is about being discreet and calming down. You know, it's the count to 10 or wait. And then, but if you tie it into the impact, I mean, I think people, we all take that. If you help understand the impact of those words had on me or the perceptions others have of me, then I think it sends it home a little bit more. And I think that, to your point, you know, the way you framed it up was good. It's just bringing awareness, but doing it in a very professional way. If anyone doesn't want to answer that anymore, do you want to go to the compensation question?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Yeah. On the comp. So on the comp thing. So I was just going to say real quick, you know, companies now have processes in place, right, where there's sort of, you know, gates you can come in at, and they've got, you know, ranges they can work at within your salaries. But I will also tell you that all of that stuff can be broken, right, and can be adjusted, but you have to ask for it. And so part of it is that you have to take a little bit of ownership and trying to understand what is available. And not being afraid to ask, even if it's not available. I'll give an example. For me, was when I moved from one role into another that was going to have a significant impact on my compensation, I wasn't going to take the role if it was going to have a significant impact, even though it was a broader scope than I had previously. And I had got them to make some pretty significant exceptions by asking for it and framing it up and having them look at it in a different way. So you just have to have it thoughtful, come forward, make it business-based, have your plan B ready in the event that plan A doesn't work, but if you don't ask, you don't get. I mean, that's the bottom line. It is starting to close. The gap is starting to close in some places. So when you look at the statistics over years, the gap between men and women is closing, but there is still a gap, especially in some roles. Okay.
What you said. Oh. I have changed companies, three major tech companies. And I will tell you, the first company I worked for, I was at that company for 16 years, and I started as an associate sales rep. So it's kind of like being a, you know, a half salesperson until you prove yourself, which I did. And I, you know, progressed through that company over the course of my time there. But I learned a lot there, but after leaving there, about how to advocate and negotiate for myself. I did a lot of reading and research. Information and facts and data will definitely help you. And I would submit that we have to own ourselves closing the gap. And as a leader, when I go through cycles with my team, and inside Cisco we call them focal, but it's basically the time of the year where you look at merit increases you do for your team members, I am highly sensitive to any differential between men, women, ethnicity, and I really do look at that because the team I have, in a lot of cases, started at different points in the company. Some were hired by my team members, but some came in through just consolidation of groups. But you have to absolutely advocate for yourself. I have a younger sister who got her first like big job, and I spent hours with her giving her coaching and confidence to go ask. And the best call I got, because I told her to ask for more than she really wanted, of course, because I'm in sales, was when she called me back and she goes, "Oh my God, they gave me what I asked for." And it wasn't just money. It was, she's a, you know, new mom, and it had to do with her family and her life. So it's empowering. When, and the worst thing that can happen, what's the worst thing that can happen?
Say no.
Someone's going to say no. That's it. But Brenda's right. You don't ask, you don't get. Mm-hmm. And on compensation, write that down, keep that with you, have a sense of value and purpose, and you have to have the work ethic and the results to back it up. But please, 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 ask.
Totally agree. Thank you on that. And then I'll just quickly answer the question about the career of inclusion and diversity. I haven't seen any formula. I've seen some people that are HR, have the HR expertise, you know, others like myself that have come in from the business. What I would say is that, you know, you really have to have a passion for it because it's hard. I mean, we're changing the way companies do business and think about people, and it's a lot of internal selling to get people to, as we were talking about the change management cycle, getting people to understand and come along with that. And I would say, you know, both a passion for people and for business. I would say that that's consistently what I've seen in the I&D practitioners that I've seen. So with that said, thank you so much for your questions. And I want to go ahead, just back to the panel one more time. If we have the opportunity to recommend a key action that everybody can take as they go forward on this journey, I'd like to ask each of you what that would be. And we'll start with Gail and move our way this way.
Probably don't need the microphone, but I would say, you know, model it as a leader and make a personal connection.
So for me, I said it earlier, I'll go back, you know, don't ever let anybody limit you. You are in control of your own destiny and go for it.
So. I would say my advice would be go meet somebody, learn about a culture, a person, something that you don't know and that you're intimidated by, and just reach out and learn. It's one of the ways to start reducing the barriers that we have. And the second thing, it's my mantra. My kids know it too. If you don't ask, you don't get. It is so critically important.
Yeah, and to that point, Brenda, I would say, you know, be bold, you know, ask questions, be your authentic self, don't change, you know, be who you are. You may have to temper it at times, but be bold and ask and learn and observe.
Well, thank you all. Thank you so much for joining us here today and helping to lead us through this conversation. And I want to thank each of you for joining us and going along with us in this conversation as we all go on our collective journey. We're here if any of you still have questions, and have a great rest of the day. Thank you.
Thank you.